This episode of Court Junkie is brought to you by Sabda, the best way to find your new home. Sabda, SABTA.com. Jillian, and you are listening to episode 4 of the Court Junkie podcast. Before I get started, I want to say thank you to everybody who has subscribed to my podcast, shared it, left a review, donated on my Patreon page. Starting this podcast has been a dream of mine for a very long time, so it's awesome to see that it's appreciated. I'm going to work hard to make this a really good podcast, but if you have any suggestions, please reach out and let me know. You can email me at courtjunkieblog@gmail.com, or you can reach me on Twitter or Facebook. And if you like the podcast, please leave me a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening from. It's also important to me to tell you that my objective with this podcast is not to glorify these cases, but to shine more light on them. Now on to the episode. Today I'm going to be covering the case of a teenager whose mysterious death has a small college town in southern Illinois divided and a family desperate for answers. This is the case of Praveen Varighese. I first heard about this case about 2 years ago. My mom, who likes to send me links to various news stories, sent me a link to a story about Praveen, and I remember immediately thinking that there was something fishy about it. About what really happened, about the way the case was handled. I don't know, things just seemed off. And now, fast forward 2 years, I've started this podcast, and there's been so much new information that has come out about this case that I just knew I wanted to talk about it. But I'm not going to cover this one by myself. I reached out to Praveen's mom, Lovely Varighese, who's going to help me tell the story. This case takes place in February 2014. Praveen Varighese was a 19-year-old sophomore at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. He was a first-generation Indian American, the only son of Lovely and Matthew Varighese. He grew up with two sisters, Priya and Preeti, who just adored their brother. Lovely worked as a nurse, and her husband Matthew was a respiratory therapist. The family lived in Skokie, Illinois for years before settling into a suburb called Morton Grove, which is about 13 miles north of Chicago, where they lived since Praveen was 10 years old. And now, Praveen was away at college at SIU in Carbondale, about 5-plus hours away. It was a cold winter night on February 12, 2014. It was a Wednesday night, and Praveen was out just doing what college kids do, partying at a friend's apartment with his cousin and his roommate, celebrating someone's birthday. He left the party just before midnight, but he never made it home. Praveen was reported missing the next day, and it wasn't long before the media picked up the story of his disappearance. Search parties were organized, and a social media campaign with the hashtag #FindPraveen was launched. Members of the community raised a $15,000 reward for information, and volunteers handed out flyers with Praveen's picture on it, wearing the red t-shirt and jeans he was wearing the night he disappeared, and a description of his favorite purple shoes that he had also been wearing. More than 200 of Praveen's family members from Chicago and St. Louis went to Carbondale to help with the search. Praveen's parents immediately knew that something was wrong. They spoke to a local reporter shortly after he went missing and said that it was unlike Praveen to not be in touch.
I don't think he left on his own. I really feel somebody took him. He knows how worried we are all the time. So there was not even one day that he didn't call us and talk to us. So if he has an access to the phone, I'm sure he would call us right now. So I have a feeling somebody has it.
Sadly, just one day after that interview aired, their worst nightmare came true. On February 18th, 6 days after Praveen disappeared, investigators held a press conference and announced that Praveen's body had been found.
Investigators from both departments have worked numerous hours and followed numerous leads to locate Praven. We have been assisted by the Illinois State Police Aviation Unit, Black Diamond Aviation, a local search and rescue canine team, and several other agencies. We deployed every available resource to locate Praven. I regret to report that Praven was found deceased at approximately 9:45 a.m. this morning in the 1400 block of East Main Street in a wooded area.
That wooded area was about 3 miles away from where the party had been. The discovery of Praveen's body wasn't the only shocking info that came out at the press conference. Authorities said that a 22-year-old man had come forward to police the night before Praveen's body was found and told them that he had given a ride to Praveen on the night he disappeared. The man told police that there was some sort of physical altercation, a fight between he and Praveen, and that Praveen had gotten out of the car and then ran into the woods.
Investigators learned while on West College Street, Praveen accepted a ride from a recent acquaintance. And on February 12, 2014, leaving just before midnight. Following a dispute, Praveen exited the vehicle in the 1400 block of East Main Street and fled into the wooded area. The difficult terrain and low temperatures are believed to have contributed to Praveen's difficulty finding his way out of the wooded area. Praveen's exact cause of death is still being investigated with the assistance of the Jackson County Coroner's Office. No foul play is expected at this time, or suspected at this time. On behalf of the City of Carbondale and the Carbondale Police Department, we extend our sincere condolences to Praveen's family and friends.
So investigators' immediate theory was that Praveen had gotten lost in those woods and then succumbed to sub-freezing temperatures. Praveen had only been wearing a t-shirt and jeans at the time, and the temperatures were in the single digits the night he disappeared. Police seemed adamant that they didn't suspect foul play, even though they knew Praveen had gotten into a physical altercation that night. Headlines that read, "Missing student Praveen Varughese found dead, foul play not suspected," were printed the very day after his body was found. Dr. James Jacoby performed the autopsy and wrote in his report that the cause of death was hypothermia, with no noticeable trauma. The coroner called Praveen's mom and told her just that. And the coroner told you that there were no injuries.
Right.
He said hypothermia, no injuries when he spoke with you.
No injuries. When he spoke with me, and even in the report, in the autopsy report, there is no injury, zero injury. And he marked that bruise as postmortem discoloration. He did not mention anything. They just found a small cut on his, abrasion on his index finger, left index finger. That's the only injury they have marked.
So the coroner said that there was a bruise on Praveen's face, but that it was post-mortem discoloration, meaning he got it after he had already passed away. And other than a small cut on his left index finger, Lovely was told that there were no other injuries. But as more details started to come out, Praveen's family and members of the community grew suspicious. Not only was the story of the man who had given Praveen a ride and then gotten into a fight with him that night not making much sense, but the family also had difficulty when it came to seeing Praveen's body for themselves. Lovely told me how she had to fight to see her son's body after he had been found.
My daughter said, "When can we see him?" And that's when Dr. Kufer said, "You know, you cannot see him here. You have to wait till go to Chicago. The funeral home of your choice will bring him there, and you can see him there." And that did it. My God, I just went crazy. I said, I was like, "Why are you saying that?" And he said, "That's a protocol here." And then my daughter said, "Then how do you know it's Praveen?" And then the detective said, "He matched our description. We don't need the family to identify him." That did to me. And I said, "Don't tell me how you identify a body, because, you know, we all are in medical field." And I said, "You are not going to tell me that you don't need us to identify." And then I said, "You are not touching him until we come and say that's our son."
I was going to say they didn't take any DNA or anything like that. They were just
nothing.
Identifying him by sight, their own.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, they said that he had the tattoo, you know, and I guess he had his red shirt and his jeans, so they figured, you know, that's him.
I honestly don't think I've ever heard of a case where nothing was needed to identify the body. No DNA, no confirmation from the family. The family was finally granted permission to see Praveen's body. And when they did, Lovely says she knew right away that something was wrong.
You know, they had his head raised up on a gurney. They had him covered up to the face, up to the neck. So we only saw his face, and we could see him from the right side only, and maybe like a 15 feet away. I saw the bruise immediately. As soon as I walked in, I saw it. And I said, who hit my son? I said, my son is beat.
So at that point, you didn't know anything about the fight that happened?
No. Oh, the fight, in the sense, the police chief came and said, he accepted a ride from a friend, and they had an argument, and he ran into woods. That's all we knew at that time. But as soon as I walked in, I saw that, and I said, who beat my son? My son is beat. And I remember my husband squeezed my hand, and he said, don't say anything. I think he was so worried that they wouldn't let us stay there or something, you know. And all of us saw it. My brother-in-law asked the officer, what is on his forehead? And he goes, oh, he was found face down, that frostbite, you know. And the next day, they say he was on his back. It's just so confusing. And thank God we had the gut feeling.
So imagine this for a second. Your son, who's away at college, is mysteriously found dead in the woods. The coroner tells you that he died from hypothermia and that there were no injuries to him. You're told you do not need to identify the body, but you insist on seeing him. And when you do, you immediately notice bruising on his face. Bad bruising. And you're given numerous explanations for it. It's postmortem discoloration. He was found face down, even though he wasn't. It would definitely make you ask some questions. And when Praveen's family went to bury him, even the funeral director noticed that something wasn't right when they saw the body. The funeral director showed the family the extent of injuries to Praveen's body and then recommended that they get a second autopsy done. And so they did. Praveen's family commissioned Dr. Ben Margolis, one of Chicago's leading pathologists and founder of the Autopsy Center of Chicago, to conduct the second autopsy. Dr. Margolis said he found significant injuries to Praveen's face. He said Praveen suffered 4 different blows to the face and the head, all of which could not have been caused by a single impact, such as falling on a rock or hitting a tree. There was an injury to Praveen's forearm and left thigh, too, and the forearm injury was so deep that it went through to the bone. There were also bruises below his knees and scratch marks that could have been caused by trees. Dr. Margolis said he believes the injuries he found may be evidence that Praveen was fighting for his life when he died. He concluded that the cause of death was actually blunt force trauma, but said he was leaving open the possibility that after Praveen's head injury, hypothermia then did set in. In the meantime, the toxicology reports came back, and according to Praveen's family, there were no drugs or alcohol detected in Praveen's system. And the toxicology reports, what did those show?
All negative. Nothing. No drugs, no alcohol in both autopsies. In both, yeah. See, in Carbondale, they did not check his, you know, the vitreous fluid, the eye fluid, and which is the most important, accurate one out of all this. So when we came here, when we hired Dr. Margolis, he said, I don't know if I will get vitreous. He said, usually the first pathologist will take that. If they have taken that, I won't have it. And he said, it's almost like 100%, they always take vitreous fluid. So when we met with him after the autopsy, it's like, I was surprised that they did not even touch it. Okay. So the vitreous came back negative, no drugs, no alcohol. That's the most accurate one. And even from the Carbondale one, see, they wouldn't even give it to us. We asked and asked if it was negative. They didn't want that thing to be released. They wouldn't give us. We had the second one out with us, but we couldn't say anything until Carbondale would release their report, you know, and they wouldn't say it. And finally, maybe like 6-7 weeks after Praveen's death, they said, you know, they called me. The coroner called me and one of the police officers called and said, there is no drugs, no alcohol in his system. Only thing he had was caffeine. They checked him for every single drug under the sun.
Now, it's important to note that Praveen may have had a few drinks that night and that they just didn't show up in the toxicology reports, given the fact that Praveen may have been laying in those woods for quite some time. In August 2014, there was a major shakeup within the Carbondale Police Department. Citing a confidential matter, the Carbondale Police Chief Jody O'Gwynn was dismissed from his position. And although it's never been confirmed that it has anything to do with this case, there have been a lot of backlash from the community about the handling of the case, with Chief O'Gwynn at the helm. In February 2015, a year after Praveen's body had been found, Jackson County State's Attorney Michael Carr announced that there would be no charges filed against the mysterious man who had given Praveen a ride and then gotten into an altercation with him. Much to the family's surprise, a grand jury had been secretly meeting, hearing evidence about the case from June 2014 to December 2014. They wrote in their decision that they agreed with Dr. Jacoby's findings that Praveen had died from hypothermia and that blunt force trauma was not the cause of death. The grand jury concluded that the evidence did not establish probable cause to believe that the driver, whose name was Gage, committed first-degree murder, second-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, or concealment of a homicidal death. Now, you'll hear the name Gage come up a lot in this episode. I'm not going to say his last name because he hasn't been charged with a crime. But his story of his encounter with Praveen the night he disappeared is absolutely crucial to what happened to Praveen, as you'll see. There was a glaring omission from that grand jury testimony, though. Huge, in fact. Dr. Margolis, that pathologist who performed that second autopsy, was never subpoenaed to testify, and so the grand jury never heard about the second autopsy report that lists the injuries to Praveen's body. In support of the grand jury's decision, State's Attorney Carr released a report detailing their investigation's findings. He said that the public was entitled to know that there was a careful, conscientious review of the evidence. The report provided not only more details about what happened to Praveen that night, but more questions as well. The report opened with how Praveen's body was found. He was found lying on his back and partially undressed. Both of his shoes had been removed, along with one sock from his right foot. His jeans had been pulled down to his mid-thigh area, almost completely exposing his boxer shorts. The report notes that Praveen's stage of undress is consistent with something called paradoxical undressing, which is common in accidental hypothermia. When people are suffering from hypothermia, they lose rationality and their nerves become damaged. They begin to feel incredibly irrationally hot, and so they strip off their clothes to cool themselves down as they're freezing to death. The report goes on to say that several witnesses, including friends, a relative, and text messages from Praveen himself, suggest that he was intoxicated on the night he disappeared. The report said that according to interviews by police, Praveen drank at least 2 Four Locos, 2 shots of rum, and 2 beers. It was reported that he played beer pong and that he was slurring his words by 11 p.m. The report also gave more details about what Gage himself said happened that night. Gage told police that Praveen walked up to his truck and asked him for a ride as he was leaving a party at 405 West College Street, just down the street from the party Praveen had been at. Gage agreed because he said he felt sorry for Praveen because Praveen wasn't wearing a coat. Gage said Praveen offered to get him cocaine in exchange for the ride, but that he declined. After driving for several minutes, Gage said he was unfamiliar with the town that they were in, and he was almost out of gas, so he told Praveen that he was going to let him out at a gas station. He said Praveen became upset and hit Gage. He then told police that he pulled over to force Praveen out of his truck. He turned on his hazard lights and he went to the other side of the car where Praveen was. He told police that he hit Praveen in the face in self-defense. The two guys then rolled down a hill, continuing to fight. And at the bottom of the hill, a police car arrived. Gage said that he yelled, "Cops," and that Praveen then ran into the woods. Gage said he then went back to his truck and spoke with the trooper, telling him that he had picked up a black male and that when he asked the man for money, the man punched him and ran into the woods. The trooper looked around, but he didn't see anybody. Gage admitted to investigators that he had lied about being robbed by a black male as an attempt to divert the trooper from asking him about driving under the influence, which he was. The report also states that the scratches, cuts, and minor injuries to Praveen's upper torso area are consistent with the explanation that Gage gave to police about Praveen jumping up and running into the woods in a t-shirt. The report also detailed an interesting phone call that one of Praveen's friends said that she got from Praveen the night he went missing, right around the time he would have been with Gage. She said Praveen's cell phone called her at 12:29 a.m., She answered and could hear a male voice saying, "Give me that back," and Praveen saying multiple times, "I'm trying to help you." The friend told police that Praveen's tone was serious and that she could hear a lot of movement. She said she believed she heard Praveen called the male Mark or Greg and that she could hear him say, "Don't hang up," and "Give me my pills back." The call lasted for a total of 1 minute and 58 seconds. The friend said it was not unusual for Praveen to call her late at night when he was drunk. The report said that there would have been no more than 3 to 4 minutes from the time that that call ended until the time that the trooper pulled up, and that there was not enough time for Gage to get from the location where the body was found to the police car within that amount of time. The report said that the evidence supports the conclusion that Praveen died of hypothermia and that it was an accident, brought on by a combination of intoxication, rough terrain, frigid weather, little or no clothing, and confused and poor judgment. Carr said that two additional experienced pathologists reviewed the findings and agreed that Praveen froze to death and that he was not the victim of blunt force trauma. His report concluded, "This was a tragic end to a young man's life, but neither the facts nor circumstances which have been presented to me support bringing a criminal prosecution against anyone." Not surprisingly, the family didn't agree with Carr's report, and neither did Dr. Margolis. Dr. Margolis told reporters after Carr's report was released that he stands by his findings that Praveen had been beaten. Not all hope was lost, though. After releasing that report, Attorney Carr said that although he stands by the grand jury decision not to indict Gage, he agreed to step down from the case and assign a special prosecutor to take over. The state's attorney appellate prosecutor was appointed to look into the case. Praveen's family has a pending wrongful death lawsuit filed against Gage. The family's lawsuit accuses Gage of giving their son a ride and then hitting him in the head with a blunt force instrument. I asked Lovely what she thinks happened to her son. She thinks he was beaten by Gage, and the fact that Praveen's phone was never used after his fight with Gage, she said, is a huge clue. So with everything that you've read through and all the info that you have, what do you think happened to Praveen?
I don't think he walked through the woods. He was beaten, I believe. If he was conscious enough to use the phone, he would have.
Right. Because he had his phone on him.
His phone was on the right side of his, on the right side by the head. So I really don't know whether this whole thing that they are telling us is the truth, but I know my son was injured.
And I mean, Gage even admitted so much in the interrogation.
Yes, big time.
Right, because according to the state's theory, if he was drunk and disoriented and couldn't find his way out of the woods, wouldn't he have called somebody? I mean, we know he was using his phone right before the fight, so.
Yes.
The appellate prosecutor is currently reviewing the case as we wait for his final report regarding Praveen's death. Praveen's family just met with him this past July, so I asked Lovely if there was any update. So I know that there is now a special prosecutor who's looking into the case. Can you like give me any updates or tell me, you know, how that's going?
We met with the special, you know, he has the case since 2015 March, and we did not know what was going on. We had no clue, but we met with him this July last month on the 25th. He called us and wanted to meet with us, and he said they had to wait until he got something to tell us. You know, he could not just meet with us and stuff like that before. So right now, he's still working on it.
In May 2016, Praveen's family finally received all of the police reports pertaining to Praveen's death. It was something the Varughese family had been asking for years now. Lovely said she won't publicly comment on the documents until the state's attorney appellate prosecutor's office releases their report. But what she has seen has reinforced her opinion that not enough was done in the initial investigation. One thing she said she noticed in the reports had to do with Praveen's shoes. Police stated that they found a pair of black and white Pumas in the forest that they believe were Praveen's. But his family says he didn't own any pair of shoes like that, and that they weren't even the correct size. They're also sure he was wearing his favorite purple shoes that night.
You know, now we have the police reports, and we started talking about the police reports. You know, we found, we know the shoe did not match, that did not match Praveen's shoe that was posted on the flyer, the missing flyer. He was wearing a purple shoe, and in the police report it says a black and white Puma shoe, and that's not even his size. And
it wasn't even his size, you said?
No. And then I'm like, we brought everything back from his apartment, every single thing, even the Q-tip that was in his room, we brought it back, and his purple shoes is nowhere to be found.
So Praveen's purple shoes are missing. They're not in police custody. They aren't with Praveen's family. So where are they? It's just another really weird thing about this case. The police reports also contain surveillance video from the area, the night Praveen disappeared. One of the video clips shows what looks to be a male figure carrying something that looks like it could be another person across the street at about 2:30 a.m. Attached to the video clip is a comment from one of the investigators, noting that the video clip should be checked out further. But there's no evidence to suggest that it ever was. No follow-up reports. Nothing.
They lied. I mean, now since I have the report, I see all this and I know what we were told and what we are finding out now.
Now, it's important to note that Gage has not been called a suspect. Not by police, state's attorneys, or anyone else. But he is the last person who saw Praveen alive, and so his story is crucially important to knowing why and how Praveen died. Gage's interrogation videos are included in the police reports that were given to the family, and some of the things he says are kind of alarming. It's hard to make out everything he says, so I'll go over what he's saying in each clip, and then I'll play it for you. In this first clip, Gage talks about how he first came across Praveen. He says Praveen approached his truck and that he offered him a ride because it was cold out and Praveen was only wearing a t-shirt. He says that once Praveen was in his truck, he was on his phone and he wouldn't tell him where to drop him off at. He claims Praveen was trying to score some cocaine. He said 30 minutes went by and then he told Praveen that he was going to have to get out of his truck and that Praveen got agitated and hit him.
We're here to talk about an individual that you came across that night, a young male. I don't think you know his name.
No.
Okay. So tell us how you first came into contact with him.
I was leaving the party, and he came up to my window and said, "Hey, give me a ride." And I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Right down the road." So I said, "Okay, you know, go ahead and get in. It's cold outside. Nobody needs to be walking when it's cold." I offered him a main ride. Driving along, right here. you know, make a left here, right here, 30 minutes goes by, yada, yada, yada. Talking on the phone with his friends about some cocaine, whatever it was. He was hyped up a little bit. Just driving, I tell him, I said, you know, ask him multiple times where you go and where's your destination. He can't really give me the exact spot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was, didn't know where he was going or was just trying to hang out with him. I don't know what he was doing, but I told him, look, I got to go. And he wasn't cooperating. I made my right. And then I think that's when he realized, hey, I'm getting taken away from my place. And that's when he started to rage a little bit. And it's when it punched my mind. I pulled over on the side of the road. Like, that's enough. Can't have that. And he would not get out of my truck. Every time I told him, hey, dude, just go ahead and get out. I have to go home. I don't have any gas. You know, look up my little gas thing. I don't have any gas. Mm-hmm. I can't be driving out. I got to make it back home.
In this next clip, Gage says he pulled the truck over, went to the passenger side of the truck, and that Praveen got out and swung at him. He said they rolled down the hill fighting. At one point, he says that he was on top of Praveen, and then Praveen was on top of him. And then the state troopers showed up, and Gage told him that he pretty much got hijacked, and that the guy who hijacked him got out of his truck and ran into the woods.
So I just pulled him on the side of the highway right there after he hit me on the face and figured I'd get out. You know, I have to get him out some type of way. Mm-hmm. So he gets out, swings on me, I back up, I hit him one time, he kind of stumbles, grabs my hoodie, pulls me with him, we roll down the hill a little bit. Like I said, a couple, you know, hits were exchanged on the way. And he was on top of me at one point, and I was on top of him at one point. Never once, it fight maybe lasted 30 seconds. I wouldn't even really call it a fight. Mm-hmm. A little scuffle, you know. We just rolled around, that's when the cops showed up. He asked me what happened, and I told him, pretty much got hijacked, guy wouldn't get out of my car. He got up, he took off running these woods right here.
This next clip is where things get even more interesting. Gage recounts his interaction with the trooper before he was told that he was free to go. He said the trooper looked into the woods, but that he wasn't sure if he stayed around to look for the quote-unquote criminal. He then goes on to say that he had been scared for his life over his encounter with Praveen, and that he didn't know what Praveen was capable of. He said that he definitely wasn't my race, and that he wasn't used to being around that type of population. And for someone who just said that the fight was more like a scuffle, now he claims he was in fear for his life.
He's right here. He said, are you sure he's right here? I said, yes, sir. He's right here in these woods. He just now got up and ran. Mm-hmm. So he stood there and he looked for a little bit and he asked if I'd been drinking. Like I said, no, but I had been. I had a little bit of drink that night. And he took my ID from me, looked in the woods for a minute, brought it back to me, told me I was free to go. And drove off. I don't know if he stood around and looked for the criminal. And, I mean, you're hijacking somebody's vehicle and they asked me to get out. My eyes, it was like he was overwhelming me. You know, I was scared for my life. Sure. I didn't know what he was capable of. Well, definitely wasn't my race. And I ain't used to being around. I grew up in over in the United States. I'm not used to being around that type of, you know, population, and those type of people. I wasn't used to any of it.
Gage then talks about how aggressive he says Praveen was. He reiterates that it was self-defense and talks about what a nice guy he is for wanting to help out Praveen in the cold weather.
I don't know. And he started to get very, very just like, I'm not like I'm going to kill you violent, but he was, you know, screaming at me, cussing at me, and he hit me, and I pulled over and put it in park, took my keys out so he couldn't take my vehicle. Mm-hmm. Took my keys out and I put them in my pocket. I walked around, just simply to get the kid out. He jumped out and swung on me. Self-defense, I swung back. He's simply trying to help a guy out when it's cold out. Being, simply, you know, I'm a nice guy. I help just about anybody I see. If I see an old woman standing on the side of the road with a bag full of groceries, I'm going to help her out.
In this last clip, Gage talks more about the fight and how he punched Praveen with a closed fist. He says, I know how to defend myself.
So that first time you punched him, You obviously avoided his punch.
The first swing, he swung on me, and I moved back. Okay. I leaned back from it, and I swung on him.
Okay. And then what hand were you using to punch?
My dominant hand, my right hand.
And just to, this is just cop terminology, but did you have your hand in a fist?
Yes.
You punched him with a closed fist?
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, I wasn't going to smack him. He swung on me. I mean, I thought, Clearly, he was he didn't get on my ankle. I don't know what the guy was capable of. I did self-defense. I know how to defend myself. And when he hit someone, yes, I used a closed fist and I punched him.
After you punched him, from what I understand, he grabbed you. And you guys kind of grabbed each other.
He had started to fall back because he was on him.
Okay.
And he grabbed me. And all his dead weight had pulled me with him. So we rolled down the hill.
Okay. And just for the record here, did you use any weapons?
No, sir.
Any rocks or sticks?
No, sir. No, sir.
Did he ever attempt to use any weapons on you?
Not that I'm aware of.
So, here are my thoughts. First of all, it definitely sounds like Gage and Praveen had gotten into quite a fight that night, even though Gage insists it was more like a scuffle. And the things that Gage says about Praveen, someone he didn't even know, is concerning too. Calling him a criminal and saying that he definitely wasn't my race. And why did Gage even pick up Praveen in the first place? I'm not sure I'm buying the reason Gage gave to police, that he felt bad for him because he didn't have a coat. And to drive around someone you don't know for 30 minutes? But even regardless of all of that, let's assume for a second that none of that matters. Here's what does. Gage admits to hitting Praveen and hitting him hard. Praveen never used his phone again after that altercation, and his phone was found on him. I keep coming back to the question of, why didn't he use his phone again? The most logical theory, to me anyway, is that Gage hit him so hard that it made Praveen disoriented, and that he ended up dying in those woods. To think that he ran into the woods, got lost because he was intoxicated or on some sort of drugs, and that he didn't use his phone to call for help, it just doesn't really make sense to me. And a lot of people feel this way. On July 29th, 2016, a crowd of more than 200 supporters gathered outside the Daley Plaza in Chicago to show support for Praveen's family and to peacefully protest for justice for Praveen. I spoke with Monica Zoukas, who's a former radio host, friend, and advocate for Praveen's family. Monica knows everything there is to know about this case. She has reviewed thousands of documents with the family, and she's watched the interrogation videos herself. Monica lives in Marion, Illinois, which is about 15 minutes away from Carbondale, and she was able to give me some really good insight on the area. You see, the area is no stranger to suspicious deaths. About 2 years prior to Praveen's death, another SIU student named Molly Young was found dead from a gunshot wound to her head. She was at her ex-boyfriend's apartment and had been killed with her ex-boyfriend's gun. The ex-boyfriend claimed that she had committed suicide while he was sleeping in the bed next to her. He said that he slept through the gunshot. It's also interesting to note that the ex-boyfriend actually worked at the Carbondale Police Department as a police dispatcher, and that when police arrived, he was able to wash his hands and change his clothes before going into the station for questioning. Investigators say Molly committed suicide, but her family believes that she was murdered. I won't get much further into it, but I think you get the idea. Back to Praveen. Monica says she first really became involved in the case after hearing the press conference investigators gave after Praveen's body was found.
I remember speaking with Molly Young's father the day they found Praveen, and I looked him in the eye right before the press conference. I said, they're going to get it right this time, right? Because this can't happen again. Like, whatever was wrong, they're going to get it right, right? And he said, I hope so. Because of all the knowledge I had for the 6 days prior to his finding, as soon as I heard that press conference, smoke was blowing out of my ears, and I was hysterical. I just had this sixth sense, this mother's intuition, something's wrong. The carefully chosen words the police chief used in that press conference, mm-hmm. I knew they were downplaying, and I just had so much information, I just couldn't let it go, and I was hysterical to get to Lovely and her family and say, you have to get a second autopsy. You have to get a second autopsy. They have to get this right, and I didn't trust that the people down here were going to do it right, and they did not. I mean, this is somebody that had bruises all over his body, that they are still saying 29 or 30 months later, the authorities over there, he had no injuries.
So I've followed a lot of cases, and it's clear to me that this family has had to jump through a lot of hurdles in order to get some very basic answers to their questions regarding their son's death, both from the Carbondale PD and the Jackson County State's Attorney's Office. Why do you think that is?
My answer to the whole question in general of why? Why would somebody either cover this up? What would be their motive of... One, I don't at all think there's a quote-unquote conspiracy to, okay, everybody get together and here's the story. I believe that, A, there's not a lot of, this isn't Chicago, this isn't Atlanta, this isn't a big crime city. So on the rare occasion somebody turns up dead, I hate to use the word, but I feel like maybe it's incompetency. I think that they got a story and they just believed it. And I know that sounds like so basic, but I think when they spoke to Gage and he said, you know, I picked him up and he was, you know, whatever, then, you know, hit me or tried to rob me or whatever. And I let him out. Whichever version of the story, you know, whether you look at the one he told the state police or the Carbondale police or this one of his friends or that one of his friends, because there's several stories he's told. I think that they believed him. However, one thing I do know for sure is, there were 13, because we have the records now, there were 13, whether it was the canine handlers or fire department people, ambulance people, investigators, police officers from Carbondale Police or SIU. I can give you a list of at least 13 people that have written reports saying they were at the scene when Praveen was found. They detail very meticulously, he was laying this way, this sock was on, this sock was off, blah, blah, blah. And every one of them says, we didn't see any marks or bruises or anything on his face or head. And I've got the images from the scene, and I've got the images from autopsy number one, and I've got the images from autopsy number two, and I can tell you that is absolutely false. And if anybody has any vision and they see those two dark marks or dents or whatever on Praveen's face were absolutely staring them in the face. And that's one of my most chilling concerns to date.
Monica also pointed out something else that I hadn't realized, and that's the size difference between Gage and Praveen. She said that Gage has at least 4 inches on Praveen and at least 30 to 50 pounds, which to me makes the whole fight scene story with Praveen on top of Gage and Gage on top of Praveen seem even more fishy. I asked Monica what her theory was, what she thinks happened that night.
There's 1 hour that has for almost 30 months made me go completely, totally nuts. And I don't know that we will ever know for sure. However, I believe 1,000,000% that Praveen was absolutely not highly intoxicated. He did not die because he wandered off into the woods due to alcohol ingestion. I believe 1,000,000% that I don't know how these two crossed paths. I don't know why they crossed paths. But I feel very certain in saying something set rage and anger off in Gage, and he hit Praveen once too many and once too hard. And it was as simple as that. I think it happened fast. I think Gage freaked out. I know he's carrying this around with him because he's not an unconscionable, crazy bastard. I know that because I heard it in his voice the time I talked to him. He has a conscience. I know he does. But he also has the will not to get in trouble.
My conversation with Monica concluded with her telling me that Praveen's family just wants answers. They just want the truth of what happened that night. And they don't think Gage is telling it. She told me that if Gage ever came forward and told them the truth, that Lovely would probably even hug him.
He is a kid who just cracks instant jokes, you know, like even from maybe preschool, he started to do that. Very, very, very funny, and he could lighten up any room. He was just a light to everyone. So, so funny. I mean, he did not want anybody to sit and be gloomy. Everyone had to be happy for him, you know. Like, so if he's in the room, nobody was sitting there with their mouth closed. Everyone was laughing. Something he, whether it is like, you know, he would say something so stupid or something, he will make up something for people to laugh. And he would talk in different accents. The Australian accent was his favorite, I guess. So there were so many things that he did. And like all his friends, I think that's what they all miss the most.
If you're interested in learning even more about Praveen's case, there's a lot of information you can check out online. His family has a website called justiceforpraveen.org, which gives more information and shows the two autopsy reports side by side. You see the first autopsy report with barely anything on it, and then the second one that was commissioned by the family that goes into detail and lists Praveen's specific injuries. The autopsy reports sort of speak for themselves. I'll also be putting up some links on my website, courtjunkie.com/podcast. Just click on Praveen's episode. I'm also really interested to hear what you guys think. Do you think there's something fishy about Praveen's death? Please tweet or post on Facebook and use the hashtag courtjunkie so we can talk about it. And that's all for this episode. A special thanks goes out to Praveen's mom, Lovely, for being kind enough to talk to me about Praveen and to tell me his story. And a special thanks to Monica Zukas, who is kind enough to give me the local perspective on the area where this all occurred. When the special prosecutor is finished with his investigation, I hope that the outcome brings some answers and maybe even some peace to the Varughese family. And a special thanks to all of you, the listeners. Please consider subscribing to this podcast and leaving me a review if you like it. And I'm doing this podcast all on my own, so if you really like it, please consider donating at patreon.com/courtjunkie so I can keep these episodes coming. And lastly, thank you to our sponsor, Sabda, the best way to find your new home. Sabda, SABTA.com.